It's December the 1st. It's that time of year again, isn't it? The time of tasty food and drink, the trauma or delight of hearing Christmas music on repeat wherever you go. I'm more in the trauma camp, but you might be in the delight camp. There's family fun, there's family politics, there's presents, there's Bruce Willis movies on the television, there's ironically bad Christmas jumpers, and of course the never fulfilled dream of a white Christmas. Whether you love it or merely tolerate it, it's always a big deal, isn't it? And buried in amongst all the discarded wrapping paper and leftover food is a story. It's a true story. True with an extra capital T. True because it actually happened, and true because it speaks eternal truths to all generations. My name's Ian. I'm a partner here at Maybridge, and it's my privilege today to kick off a short series we're doing throughout Advent called Based on a True Story. And just in case it's not clear to you, the story we're talking about is the Nativity story. The story of a baby born in a manger to a virgin named Mary. The baby's name was Jesus, God made flesh. And the peculiar thing about this story is it's a story that is not only told historically, but it's also told prophetically. That means as well as being told as history, something that happened in the past, we also have reliable records of it being told as a future event. And where I want to go today is the book of Daniel. Daniel was a prophet who lived around 600 years before the birth of Christ. And to give a little bit of background, Daniel was an Israelite. He was a Jew. And these were the people from whom Jesus came from. And the Old Testament is actually the story of these people, the Jewish people, the Israelites, and their relationship with God throughout the years. And Daniel is a bit of a strange book. It's a wonderful book. It's a really interesting read, and it's got some of the most memorable, famous Bible stories in, but it's also got some really crazy dreams and visions and things like that as well, some of which we'll look at today. But the book of Daniel starts with Jerusalem, the capital of Israel, being conquered and the Israelites being taken into exile by the Babylonian Empire. Babylon is situated in modern-day Iraq, and Daniel and three of his friends are selected by the king of Babylon and taken into his household as his servants and advisors. So they're in a privileged position, although also very much in captivity and in exile. And as time goes on, Daniel becomes known as a man of great wisdom and the seer of visions and the interpreter of dreams. And it's here that we see some of the predictions underpinning the story of Jesus. But first, I want to start with a prayer of Daniel's. This is from chapter 2, 20 to 22. And this is going to be threaded throughout the whole message this morning. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. This is the God who Daniel serves, one who is eternal, who rules over the kings of the world. And Daniel is all about making a name for his God, not for himself. So in Daniel chapter 2, there's a king. The king's called Nebuchadnezzar, and he has this disturbing dream, and he calls all of the sorcerers and enchanters and magicians in the land to come and interpret the dream for him. But there's just one catch. He won't tell them what the dream is. He wants them to both tell him what he dreamt and tell him what that dream meant. Oh, and there's one more thing. He says, if you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, You shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. I might steal that line for the next time I get terrible customer service. Needless to say, they couldn't fulfill the king's demands. But enter Daniel, the one who serves the God who reveals deep and hidden things and gives wisdom and knowledge. We'll pick up his story at Daniel 2, verses 31 to 45. Now, we've got a fairly sizable length of scripture here, but it's all going to be up on the screen, so hopefully you can follow along as I read it. It says, "You saw, O king," this is Daniel before the king, addressing him, "You saw, O king, and behold, a great image." This is an image is thought to be a statue. "This image, mighty and of exceeding brightness, stood before you, and its appearance was frightening. The head of this image was of fine gold, its chest and arms of silver, its middle and thighs of bronze, its legs of iron, its feet partly of iron and partly of clay. As you looked, a stone was cut out by no human hand, and it struck the image on its feet of iron and clay and broke them in pieces. Then the iron, the clay, the bronze, the silver, and the gold all together were broken in pieces and became like the chaff of the summer threshing floors, and the wind carried them away so that not a trace of them could be found. But the stone that struck the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth." This was the dream. So he's done part one. Now we shall tell the king its interpretation. "You, O king, the king of kings, to whom the God of heaven has given the kingdom, the power and the might and the glory, and into whose hand he has given, wherever they dwell, the children of men, the beasts of the field, the birds of the heaven, making you rule over them all. You are the head of gold. Another kingdom inferior to you shall arise after you, and yet a third kingdom of bronze, which shall rule over all the earth. And there shall be a fourth kingdom strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things. And like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all of these. And as you saw the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and partly of iron, it shall be a divided kingdom. But some of the firmness of iron shall be in it, just as you saw iron mixed with soft clay. And as the toes of the feet were partly iron and partly clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly brittle. As you saw the iron mixed with soft clay, so they will mix with one another in marriage, but will not hold together, just as iron does not mix with clay. And in the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to another people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever. Just as you saw that a stone was cut from a mountain by no human hand, and that it broke in pieces the iron, the bronze, the clay, the silver, and the gold, a great God has made known to the king what shall be after this. The dream is certain, and its interpretation sure." Bit of a strange dream he's had, bit of a strange interpretation, but to summarise, this image or statue represents several empires, starting from the Babylonian one. The fourth one would be broken by an everlasting empire, a stone from a mountain, cut from a mountain, but not by human hands. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. But what does this have to do with Christmas? I'm getting there, I promise. But this vision is less about the event of Jesus coming, although it does touch on that, as we'll see. But it's more about what leads up to and prepares the way of his coming. Let's look at the empires that Daniel saw. It may not be immediately obvious in the passage we've just read in Daniel 2 what these different empires are. It's kind of stating the obvious in one sense, that after the Babylonian Empire, there's going to be a bunch of other empires to come and go. That was what happened at that time. But a lot of the interpretation of Daniel 2 comes from Daniel 8, where Daniel has a vision, and there's a lot of parallels with Daniel 2, but it actually very specifically names a number of these empires. It's quite incredible in its accuracy in terms of what it predicted. So the first empire, the head of gold, was identified as Nebuchadnezzar, or the Babylonian Empire, the one that Daniel was in exile in. And Daniel tells us that an inferior empire would come after this. Now, history tells us that after the Babylonian Empire was the Persian and Median Empire. But Daniel 8 actually specifically says that after the Babylonian Empire, it's going to be taken over by the kings of Media and Persia. Now, the Median and Persian Empire came out of what we now know as Iran. And the empire became huge for its day, but it never really formed an identity. All the subject nations kept their own culture and language and traditions, and ultimately the empire fell apart, but not before making huge progress. Now, the American historian Will Durant said of this empire, he said, for the first time in known history, an empire almost extensive as the United States received an orderly government, a competence of administration, a web of swift communications, a security of movement by men and goods on majestic roads, equaled before our time only by the zenith of Imperial Rome. So the Median and Persian Empire set the stage for the next one to come. The bronze middle and thighs of the Daniel 2 statue, the kingdom that would rule over the earth. In the vision of Daniel 8, this kingdom is represented by a goat and is identified as the king of Greece. And the Median and Persian Empire was indeed conquered by the king of Greece, Alexander the Great. Alexander the Great conquered and expanded on this former empire. He was undefeated in battle, and by the time of his death at the age of 32, his empire spanned from Greece in the west to India in the east, from Uzbekistan in the north down to Egypt in the south. It was an empire like nothing that had ever been seen before. Now, his teacher was the famous Aristotle, said by many to have been the father of modern science and philosophy. And so Alexander the Great was this really learned man, and he loved the Greek language and culture. So unlike the Median and Persian Empire, he spread this language and culture, and this was one of his legacies. The Greek language was spoken widely throughout the ancient world, and the Greek culture and the philosophy, the way of thinking and reasoning became really common. This was the first time that such a wide group of people had been able to communicate and reason together in the same kind of way. And his empire also facilitated a functioning economy and complex network of trade routes. The famous Silk Road dates itself back to this time. Daniel 2:40 says, "And there will be a fourth kingdom, strong as iron, because iron breaks to pieces and shatters all things, and like iron that crushes, it shall break and crush all these." A few hundred years later, the next big empire on the scene was the Roman Empire, a mighty empire that crushed like iron all that had come before it. And at its peak, the Roman Empire covered almost 7 million square kilometres and ruled 70 million people, a fifth of the entire population of the planet at that time. They became famous for their long straight roads connecting every city in their empire. Now, under Roman rule, technology advanced by leaps and bounds, cities were built, education and administrative systems bloomed, and it also brought peace. You may not have thought that if you were one of the ones being conquered, but where there had once been many small tribal regional wars and where there had been trade routes that had been plagued by bandits, under Roman rule, that iron fist, this was virtually eliminated. Through good, safe roads, travel became far more accessible. But there was another kingdom seen in Nebuchadnezzar's dream. "In the days of those kings, the God of heaven will set up a kingdom that shall never be destroyed, nor shall the kingdom be left to other people. It shall break in pieces all these kingdoms and bring them to an end, and it shall stand forever." In the midst of all this development, empire building, battling for superiority and control, another development was taking place. A very different development. In a small hillside hamlet called Nazareth, with no more than 100 Jewish families living in it, an unmarried teenage girl discovers she's expecting a child, despite being a virgin. the stone cut from a mountain by no human hand. This life developing inside of her would launch a kingdom unlike any other kingdom seen before. A kingdom of sons, not subjects. A kingdom that spreads not by might and power and violence, but by the Spirit of God living in and through his people. This is a kingdom that brings all other kingdoms to an end and stands forever, not by imposing itself on others by force and control, but by changing hearts and spreading from person to person. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. Now, what we witness here in Daniel is this incredible chain of events starting off. These empires coming and going had all contributed in different ways to mankind being at the peak of their development in all history up until this point. Thanks to the Greeks, there was this common language that was spoken throughout most of the ancient world. There was a common way of thinking and debating and reasoning. The New Testament was written and distributed in Greek. The way the Apostle Paul writes and reasons shows his Grecian influence in his education and his thinking. With a common language, levels of literacy were higher than ever, meaning that teachings could be easily written down and they could be distributed to be read by others. Thanks to the Persians and the Romans, there were good quality networks of roads and trade routes, making travel relatively efficient and safe. Teachings could not only be recorded and written down, but they could be distributed far and wide. Churches could be administered and led remotely by letters, even from prison. We've been reading today, and we read here every week, the literary product of the age, the Bible. The stone cut from a mountain by no human hand came at just the right time, a time when the conditions were right for it to become a great mountain filling the earth. Now, Daniel teaches us that God is always at work, no matter what our perspective is, no matter where we sit, no matter what we're going through. Daniel prayed that prayer when he was in exile, when he was in captivity, yet he had the ability and the faith to be able to pray a prayer like that, because he was inwardly free. He knew that his God had him, his God was in control. He had a vision of somebody who would come 600 years later, well after his time, that would come and free all those who came to him. Advent is a season of waiting. It's a time of long, dark nights as we wait for the sun to return. It's a time of anticipation as we give and receive gifts. It's a time to remind ourselves that we're celebrating the birth of a child that is the culmination of centuries of kings and empires coming and going, warring amongst themselves, each trying to make a name and a legacy for themselves, but without knowing it, laying the foundation for the name above every names, the one who wouldn't kill a multitude to make a name for himself, but would lay down his life in order to save the multitude. So whatever waiting there is in your life right now, this is always a time to reflect on that, to reflect on the movement of God throughout the ages, throughout all times, throughout our lives as well, and see he's at work in all things. So I'm going to start to bring it to a close now, and we're going to pray together, if that's okay, the prayer of Daniel. So I'm going to lead you here, and let's just pray this out loud and make this prayer our own. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and the light dwells with him. I began this today by saying that this is a true story in two ways. It's true as in its history, But it's also true because of the transformative truths that it speaks to us. And some of you here today might struggle with this story, might struggle to accept its truthfulness. That's okay. I'm personally convinced of its historical truths for many reasons, some of which I've touched on today. But I'm not here to argue that case. But what I do want to say to any of you who may find yourself doubting it is look around you. Here's a room full of people, all with their own stories, all with very different stories. It's a room full of people who found meaning and purpose in this story, whose lives have been enriched in so many ways by this story. People who've been compelled to live more selflessly, more generously, more lovingly. This story is one of a glimmer of light breaking through in the darkest of times. It's a story of unjust empires being toppled by a small stone. It's a story of the God of all creation, of all wisdom and might, reaching out to little old us and weaving our story into his. It's a story of hope. It's a story that all things can be made new. Oh, this is a profoundly true story. And there's room for your story in it too. Whatever your story is, the triumphs, the tragedies, the things you're proud of, the things you're ashamed of, all can be redeemed and restored as they're woven into this eternal story. I'm going to close in a moment in prayer and hand back to Piero to lead us in worship. But I want to encourage you, for anybody here whose story is, they feel their story, their life is not woven into this eternal story. If you want to come and get prayer for that, don't leave today without taking up that opportunity. For any of you who feel that maybe your story is just really misaligned at this time, you can't see where things are going, again, don't miss this opportunity today to get prayer for that. God's here. God's present. He wants to meet with you today. Blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. Lord, we thank you for what we learned through the story of Daniel. We thank you that within all the stories of this world, you're telling a much bigger one, a truer one, a greater one, one that transcends all things and all times, and you invite us to be part of it. Thank you for this incredible story of Jesus emptying himself, being born in the likeness of men, humbling himself to the point of death. Thank you that in this story we can be free. In this story we can learn to live in him and through him. Lord, we want to praise you, Jesus, the name above every name, the name at which every knee should bow. We give you all the praise. We give you all the glory.